This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to another scintillating edition of our weekly news and analysis program, Taking Aim. I'm Steve Woodward. Alongside me is David Hensley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, everyone.
Well, let's get right to it because we've got a lot to get to today. We're going to have a special guest joining us, which is going to be the beginning of a new, recurring feature of this program. But we had no problem identifying this week's public enemy number one. It has never been easier than it was this week. His name is Jay Pritzker. He is a colossal figure, and I mean that literally, who happens to be the governor of Illinois and heir to the Hyatt Hotel fortune. He is also qualified to be his own float in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, if he so desired. But he has been the governor.
Do they tether him when he speaks? When he's at the podium, if you look closely, there's little tie-downs like the radio antenna.
He is a caricature of all caricatures when it comes to bloated politicians. He has managed to ensure that Illinois has remained on a downward trajectory economically, and he has managed to drive out a lot of business from that state.
Boeing left.
Boeing being, you know, sort of exhibit A. But guess what? Putting all of that aside, Jay Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, thinks that he has the what it takes to run for president of these United States. And he happened to turn up at a weekend event recently in of all places, New Hampshire. And, of course, that's where public presidential aspirants often find themselves when they're plotting their first steps toward what they think is a run for the White House. Jay Pritzker attends this event, and instead of extolling any of his virtues as a potential president and leader of the free world, instead he uses it as an opportunity to denounce the MAGA movement and to go beyond that, to threaten its very existence and to call upon his people, the extreme Marxist left, to do what they've never done before, which is to rise up in waves of violence, which he himself has never called for until now. Play clip two.
If it sounds like I'm becoming contemptuous of Donald Trump and the people that he has elevated, it's because I am. You should be too. They're an affront to every value this country was founded upon. When we emerge from this, and we will emerge from this, our democratic agenda must be bold and our ideas fearless. We must be willing to slay sacred cows and allow the courage of our actions to match the immediacy of our words. And we must deliver on that agenda for working families and for the real people who truly make America great. Listen, I understand the tendency to give in to despair right now, but despair is an indulgence that we cannot afford in the times upon which history turns. Never before in my life have I called for mass protests, for mobilization, for disruption. But I am now. These Republicans cannot know a moment of peace. They have to understand that we will fight their cruelty with every megaphone and microphone that we have. We must castigate them on the soapbox and then punish them at the ballot box.
Wow. Tough talk from Mr. Pritzker. Of course, anybody who visits Chicago knows that anyone walking the streets of that city
is unsafe.
And they do not know a moment of peace,
right?
Because you're always at risk of being
gunned down,
robbed and gunned down, thanks to the worst mayor in America, who of course Pritzker endorses entirely. But the veracity of those words, the contemptuousness for more than, call it, 50% or more of the American electorate. If that's the way you kick off a presidential campaign, I think there's reason to believe that the Democrats are in worse shape than we thought. I mean, they are beyond now delusional.
Their strategy is revolution.
Yes.
That's their strategy. I mean, you see them stirring up local people here, but here's my takeaways on this. Two points. First of all, this illustrates that leftists are anarchists, and I've said this before, and I'll never stop saying it, whether it was the Bolsheviks in 1917 Russia, it was Hitler's brown shirts in 1930s Germany, or it's today's Antifa. Leftists are anarchists, and history repeats itself. The second thing is, let's talk about double standards, right? They impeached President Trump for doing less to incite violence than he just did. And secondly, you know, when he was speaking in there in New Hampshire, was Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren there to criticize billionaires who inherited their wealth?
Yeah.
He's not a self-made man, and we're tired of billionaires in politics. I thought that was the Democrats' mantra against Trump. Let's apply that. But, you know, once again, you can't be a Democrat without being a hypocrite.
And has Bernie Sanders ever asked him, why haven't you paid your fair share?
Right. Where was Bernie?
Vermont's near New Hampshire. Yeah. Last time I looked on my big world globe.
Yeah, none of that was said. None of those people were there to be found. And, you know, you can't. So leftists are anarchists. And, you know, the hypocrisy and double standards for the Democrats are right there for everyone to see. And, oh, by the way, I can tell this dude right now, he has a zero chance of being president of the United States.
And by the way, to contrast his calls for violence, we have our close runner-up for public enemy number one this week. He is not a man of considerable girth, nor of considerable intellect, for that matter. He is the representative from the state of Maryland, Democrat Jamie Raskin. Now, Jamie didn't call for violence in so many words, but he was leading a rally out in front of Washington's Union Station earlier in the week with a throng of these so-called angry union workers who don't want their rights taken away by Doge and the MAGA movement. And in the midst of this rally, in which he was talking into a bullhorn and just spewing all kinds of cliches and making reference to various historical figures such as Martin Luther King Jr., a conservative podcaster named Jack Posobiec happened to be coming by, and he began to video the proceedings with his phone. And at some point, because he's sort of a provocateur, because he's a younger, brash kind of a guy, has a podcast called Human Events Daily, he began shouting at Jamie some very pertinent questions. And well, let's just say that the next thing that happened to Jack Posobiec was that he was on the ground, and his phone and backpack had been removed
by a violent mob.
By a violent mob that was ready to pounce. Play right. Clip three.
We're going to defend the right to assemble.
Yes!
Yeah! We know with Dr. King that the greatness of America is the right to protest for what is right.
Yeah! Yeah!
Against lawbreakers in office. And that's where we are today. I'll leave you with my friends with the words of the great Marylander Frederick Douglass.
Jamie, why did you lose the popular vote? Why did you lose every single swing state?
USA! 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 USA!
Why did let me talk? Let me talk.
So I know we're on radio, but you could hear what happened immediately. It became a completely untethered fracas in which Jack Posobiec was outnumbered by about, I don't know, 10 to 12 to 1. And he did survive the incident. He did not suffer any serious injuries. But just look how quickly those people were willing to get violent and physical.
Well, and ironically, right after the speaker, Raskin said, "We have a right to assemble. We have a right to protest." A person, citizen, stood up and protested, and they attacked him.
You're right.
I mean, that's literally, they all cheered, "Yeah, we got a right to protest." And then a person protested, and they assaulted the man. See, proving once again, you cannot be, just like Pritzker, right? Leftists are anarchists in their violence, and you can't be a leftist without being a hypocrite. Both of these cases display that leftists are anarchists, and you can't be a leftist without being a hypocrite. We'll just call those Hensley's Law of Leftists.
Well, David, we have a special guest this week on Taking Aim. Very delighted to welcome our friend Sloan Rackmuth, who is a independent journalist and podcaster who tackles all of the key topics of the day, both through her writings and through a podcast that she co-hosts twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, NC Political Tea. Good morning, Sloan.
Good morning. How are you, gentlemen?
We are fine, and thank you for referring to us as such. We appreciate that very much.
I'm certainly not used to it.
It's a rarity around here, let me tell you. So those of us who tune into NC Political Tea and read your work on Substack have been following some of the topics that are quite relevant at the moment. And I thought we could start off by talking about the juxtaposition of the Make America Healthy Again agenda and how North Carolina can play a role in that in the areas of health freedom, food reform, and pharma pushback via the leadership, of course, at the federal level of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And I have to say, in my lifetime, I never thought that I would be referencing RFK Jr. so frequently in everyday conversation, but here we are. And so far, I believe you would agree with me that he's proven to have been an excellent selection for this role. Tell us a little bit about how you see North Carolina's role in pursuing this MAHA agenda.
Well, you know, North Carolina has been heralded as the state of education and medication for many years. We've got some of the top-tier research universities in the country, obviously, big biotech hub, as well as pharma manufacturers. So it is going to be interesting, given that so much special interest pays for both parties, as we're well aware, and really funds both parties, and we're, you know, owned by the hospital lobby up here in Raleigh. So we'll see how this works. But yes, I did write a recent article about that and kind of put this in a three-tiered system, the ones you talked about. And so there's a complement of bills that are being forwarded, and they're working their way through the legislature. I'm not sure how far they'll go because we have Republicans on our side who is what we call trans Republicans who are blocking them. But we will see. There's one that, you know, has, you know, vax freedom. You're free to not be required to have vaccinations, particularly if they don't have FDA approval. I think that that is a basic. There's been a lawsuit recently in Greensboro with a Greensboro school system that their child was vaccinated without the consent of either the child or the parent.
Yeah, the football player. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there are cases that are making their way through as well. But again, we've got quite the opposition within our own party to overcome.
And I did not know until I read it in your piece about State House Representative Jonathan Almond, who is a unfortunately has witnessed the devastation of vaccine injury in the case of two of his children, and now that has motivated his participation in the Medical Freedom and Vaccine Choice House bill, which is pending. But he literally has stood by and watched his children suffer adverse reactions to the so-called COVID vaccine. Is that right?
Yes. And he, you know, we see politicians come and go a lot, but, you know, if you're like me, you really enjoy seeing the ones that have a you know, an axe to grind, if you will, because you know that they're going to hold to the principles and to their campaign promises. And Jonathan Almond is one of those guys. He's seen it firsthand, and he's been really monumental in initiating these bills, and he's got some pretty decent sponsors. So he's not there, you know, on his own doing it. He's bringing in people to do a collection of these bills.
Yeah, you know, and I hearken back to that story of the Greensboro teenager who was told to go in and be tested for COVID because there had been an outbreak within the team. And he arrived at the testing location only to discover that they were also essentially using it as a opportunity to offer the vaccine, the jab, because it's not really a vaccine. And and they couldn't get in touch with his parents for their permission. And the words of this tyrant still ring in my ears, who said, "Give it to him anyway." I mean, that was the attitude of that
so
time.
So crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the kid was pretty much powerless at that point to to reject it. You know, he was yielding to the authority figure that happened to be wielding a needle.
I so hope those parents win that lawsuit and they get tons of money.
The other piece of legislation that I think bears our attention is the Healthy Schools Act. I mean, it seems like such a no-brainer, right? That we would want to revert to using fresh produce and other Carolina-grown products as part of our school diets, as opposed to, you know, the fish sticks and tater tots that I grew up on and that have been pervasive in public school cafeterias for decades, really. What are the odds that this bill has any legs?
I think if any 1 to 3 will pass, it'll be this one, because it doesn't damage the pharma industry, and it's dealing with kids being healthy, and how could you oppose that? However, now let's go back to, you know, Michelle Obama's push to get kids healthy. So this is kind of the same kind of thing, so we do have to give the devil her due, and by devil I mean devil. But, you know, this is great for our state because, look, we're second only to Texas in terms of rural territory and population, and a lot of that is farming. And so we have heard stories, or maybe you even know farmers, who have, for whatever reason, had to throw away their crops because they had an overabundance of something, and wherever they were selling it just couldn't take it on. Why in the hell aren't we feeding our children that? So that's, I think it makes more sense here in North Carolina, if I do say, just because it's going to also stimulate the economy and put North Carolinians first.
Let me say a couple personal anecdotes on this. First, about school nutrition. So I used to have a distribution center out in Southern California, and across from our loading dock was another warehouse. And they were cleaning it out one day, and there were just pallets of food everywhere, pallets and pallets of canned food. And I wander over there, and it was all stamp made in China. So I'm talking to the owner, the manager, and I'm like, "What do you guys do with all this food?" Because I noticed that it was canned food coming from China. And he's like, "Well, we sell it to institutions." I'm like, "Well, who's your biggest customers?" He said, "Prisons and schools." Literally, canned food coming from China, and his biggest customers was prisons and schools. But let's take it locally. Here in Moore County Schools, the pilot gave me grief when I got elected to the school board, because I said, "I'm going to look at everything from academics down to what we're feeding our children." I said that 4 years ago, and the pilot made fun of me back then when I said, "Oh, Hensley's going to micromanage." All I did is say, "Hey, what are we feeding our children? I wanted it upgraded." Moore County Schools has gone through 2 upgrades of the quality of our food. We're returning back to actually cooking food, not just heating up chafing pans that come from the, you know, the Chinese distributor. And next year, Steve, to your point, we're getting rid of those sugary breakfasts. Historically, you know, we hand kids a honey bun or a healthy Pop-Tart made to Michelle Obama's standards. Starting next year, I'm not sure what our goal is, to get to where we're scrambling eggs and cooking sausage, and when the kids come in the morning, we're handing them protein and healthy food. So Moore County Schools is leading the way on feeding our students healthy food.
And won't it be glorious if we can achieve even parts of these MAHA objectives, and that North Carolina would be a leader in that movement? We will keep a close eye on that. Let's stay on the education front, shall we? And let's talk about the Trump administration's laser focused objective of restoring school discipline. Now, you would think that, again, why was this not an objective of the Biden-Harris administration? Why was this not an objective of previous Democrat presidential administrations?
Well, because it was their policies that caused the problem.
And or the marathon governorship of Roy Cooper, for that matter. Talk to us a little bit, Sloan, about the executive order and how it sort of reverses the Obama administration desire not to enforce discipline for fear that it would be viewed as mere naked racism.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's race-based discipline and restorative justice is what it was. You know, it's based on disparate impact. So let me tell your audience what that means. It means that if you look at a school like Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system, who has 65% of its students black, right? And they have, this school district has a, get this now, disproportionate amount of black students getting suspended or punished. The DOJ would come in, okay, and investigate up one side and down the other of school districts in order to prevent that. And this has been a long ongoing thing from the third year of Obama's administration. To prevent that, this has been a race-based discipline where, sadly, we see black students getting away with whatever they want and very lightly punished. Here's the problem with that, though. There's many problems, but here's the key thing. Most of the victims are also black. So it is a policy dedicated to coddling the offender, but doesn't give a rat's tail about the actual victims. And so we saw girls who would be raped, and this has happened in Charlotte, raped in a bathroom. And the student would come to school after being arrested and processed the very next day with an ankle monitor on and be able to play in football games, etc. But the point is if the girl was uncomfortable with this, they would just have to go to another school. That's one. And number two, it also created a situation in colleges where young men who were just accused. Now, the mere accusation, no evidence required, the mere accusation of sexual assault of any kind mandatorily would have to be dealt with. And we found de facto star chambers for young men without any evidence who were accused of things like this and lives ruined because there just wasn't any evidence. In many cases, dozens of them, probably hundreds of them we don't know about, were walked back only after the lives of young men had been destroyed. So this rollback is a welcome thing for me. I'm a mom of two with a young man going off to college in 2 years. So this is good for me. And I also have a daughter, and there's another change. I don't want men in the bathrooms of schools for the main reason my husband will probably be in jail because of that for murder one that ever happened to his daughter. So
if I was on the jury, he wouldn't go to jail.
Very practical reason there. But, you know, there's another more pervasive issue that is involved with a lack of discipline in schools and in classrooms. Putting aside the students who are the victims of the physical violence and the threats, the long-term effect we have seen more broadly is that it disrupts learning, and therefore we see these ridiculously low proficiency rates among the third and eighth grade tests in math and reading, and it's stagnating. It's not improving, and it's a chronic problem, and it seems to me that reverting schools to places where students are safe and teachers are free to discipline the small percentage of troublemakers, that's going to be a revolutionary over time.
Yeah, I think it will. And look, we're hearing a lot that teachers are leaving solely because they don't have high salaries. I don't believe it's part of it, because teachers know what they're going to make before they get in and before they even elect to major in that degree. So we know that mostly comes from not having the latitude to punish children the way that you would want. Or I won't even say punish. I would say control the learning experience.
Or just...
really
or just providing a safe work environment. I mean, imagine if we, you know, if I had a company, you know, here in Moore County, when I got elected to the school board, the situation was we had students punching teachers. We had students getting in these horrible fights, but, you know, teachers would get hit. I mean, there were videos of this. And if my company was such an unsafe work environment where, like, my employees would get hit, they would get yelled at, they would get, you know, I would get sued and my company, the government would shut my company down. But for some reason, it's perfectly okay for schools to provide an unsafe work environment for their employees. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
We put a stop to all this stuff in Moore County schools, but Sloan, you're absolutely right. Moore County, conservative Moore County, we had race, when it was in our strategic plan, we had a woke strategic plan that had elements of race-based punishments, restorative justice, and maybe worst of all, race-based academic outcomes.
And now we have a complete and total racist here at the DEI, and that would be Mo Green, who's heading all of this up. But I will tell you that we've got Republicans who, until recently, haven't really had the intestinal fortitude, if you will, to proffer bills that had teeth in them. And I think that, you know, Trump has set the example, obviously, from the top, but now it's emboldened leaders like John Corbett in the House and Neil Jackson, to put forth bills with real serious consequences for violators. I think it's a really good start for us.
Well, all of those things, whether it's restorative justice, race-based outcomes, race-based punishment, it's all unconstitutional discrimination that somehow the left got away with while in their religion of wokeism. And good, I'm glad to see that the General Assembly is finally attacking this stuff, because students don't learn. It affects the grades, not just of the offenders, but all the other students. And our employees, both our classified and certified staff, it was an unsafe work environment. And Sloan, you're absolutely right. Most people quit jobs not because of pay, but because of the working conditions. And you cannot expect teachers, classified staff, or anybody to work in that type of environment. I respect the people who do it, but we owe it to them to put a stop to it, restore discipline in our schools.
And, you know, when things get bad enough, when things get sideways enough, even Democrats sometimes decide that it needs to be reversed. We talked about this earlier in the week.
Well, show me where they vote that way, though.
Show me where the elected
officials vote that way.
We talked about an example of that, which was encouraging during the week, when a Democrat joined Republicans to vote for this bill that would basically finally force county sheriffs to cooperate with ICE. And one of the key violators of that is the Mecklenburg County Sheriff, who is not a friend of ICE. And a Mecklenburg County member of the House came over to the other side and voted with the Republicans to support the bill to force sheriffs to help us end the scourge of illegal immigration violence in our state. So I think that was an encouraging moment. We take them as we can get them, of course. But I want to remind everybody that our guest is Sloan Rackmuth. She is the co-host of a twice weekly podcast that you must put on your calendar, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, NC Political Tea. She is also a gifted independent journalist and writer. You can find her work on Substack.com. Sloan,
and she's a very effective, no holds barred person who gets results.
Correct.
Thank you.
So we thank you for that. Yeah. We need to spend a little bit of time talking about the Attorney General, and it pains me to say it because I thought that the Republicans ran a very strong candidate for Attorney General last fall in Dan Bishop.
I was so disappointed Dan didn't get elected.
And he would have been such a game changer. But now we are stuck with another Democrat in that role. First it was Roy Cooper, then it was Josh Stein, and now it is Jeff Jackson, a former member of the House of Representatives. And he has already proven in a very short amount of time what his agenda is. Number one, it's to try to build up sort of a national profile so that, like others before him, he could potentially use the Attorney General office as a stepping stone to higher office. And also, he is joining these left-wing attorneys general across the nation who jump at every chance they get to file lawsuits opposing various Trump executive orders, challenging them. Can you talk a little bit, Sloan, about the trend that we're seeing with Attorney General Jackson?
Well, we're not seeing much from Jackson other than he is just a foot soldier in George Soros' army and trying to be an obstructionist all across the country, joining with 18 other attorney generals for things like reversing or try to stop, you know, birthright citizenship, that agenda to actually everything that Trump has proffered to the Doge initiative. And to the credit of Republicans, I don't know how far this bill has gotten, they're looking to stop Jackson because, look, it is our money, right? We voted for this. We voted for this change from Trump. We don't want our taxpayer dollars being used for frivolous lawsuits to hijack his agenda. And so we'll see if that bill passes. We're going to follow it through. Actually, we'll talk about that tonight. We'll see if that passes. Let's see if we can put a hit to this. Get up. Look, if the guy wants to go on these wild goose chase lawsuits to try to stop Trump, let him pay for it with his own money.
Well, not only is it a waste of money, Sloan, but also, you know, what about these illegal aliens? You know, the one in Lee County who's kidnapping and raping middle school girls, and the one in Garner who kidnapped and held for ransom a mother and her one-year-old daughter. Our attorney general should be working to protect North Carolinians and keep us safe, not trying to derail the president's agenda. That's not his job. We've got rapists, murderers, and other violent criminals. You know, why doesn't he focus on getting the DMV run rather than trying to derail Trump?
Yes. Yeah, there are so many other things that need to be done. He doesn't have much of an interest in doing it. I'm not really sure, you know, what his function is. Again, the only reason he's been in the news is for these frivolous issues of doing things that are going against the will of the people who voted for Trump.
Well, just like Mandy Cohen, who was in charge of our Health and Human Services, she was 100% a political activist. It's the same thing with Jeff Jackson. He's 100% a political operative. He's not doing the things an attorney general should do to protect North Carolinians. He's just
right. You're right. It's not about. It's about the stepping stone now, isn't it?
He's representing the party and his ideology. He's representing his party and his ideology. He's not representing what's best for North Carolinians, in my opinion.
He hasn't done anything about protecting Jewish students on campus.
Right.
He hasn't done anything about protecting students and faculty members, actually. He hasn't done anything to steal us from the risk of Islamic terrorism. In fact, his spokesperson is a fully observant Muslim, which is fine, but who goes on rants about Israel and Jews. That's his spokesperson. That's at the Department of Justice. Yeah. So we're supposed to trust someone that is, you know, playing footsie with Islamists to run this state? I don't think so.
Not only is he not doing anything to support the people whose rights are getting violated, I think it's just a matter of time before we find out that his office is supporting those who are out protesting and who are attacking Jewish people.
I would not doubt that at all.
It's just a matter of time.
That's a chilling thought, isn't it? Sloan.
Not surprising.
Yeah, no, that's true. Not surprising. Sloan, talk to us a little bit about when you prepare for your podcasts and trying to address the key issues of the day. What do you find most often resonates with your audience? Are people more interested in pending legislation than we give them credit for? Because I think sometimes there's a presumption that, you know, the making of the sausage in Raleigh is sort of not very interesting, but what do you find is is the attraction of your podcast as you build your audience?
Well, we found that people do actually like that because they look at this as an early warning system. You know, there's a lot of bills, and I always tell people that when you see these bills, pay attention because, you know, they may end up in the budget. They might not make it through, right? And you may not see them make it to crossover, which is happening May 8th. You may not see them get, you know, an up or down vote, but you will see a lot of these in the budget where, you know, that's where we, the Republicans, have a lion's share of the control. But some of these, you know, some of these things will end up there. So just pay attention. And I think we're, you know, we're looked at as an early warning sign. Some of our better segments that have really come out have been anything going on with the schools people are very interested in, and illegal immigration. People don't know about the crimes that are going on. People need to have a more holistic picture. And you guys are well aware, more than aware than anyone in the state, probably. We have a news desert when it comes to conservative news. We just don't have anyone. And so someone that is going to hold, you know, our people accountable and to have a news source from our point of view is just very important to people.
I agree with you completely. And, you know, we see that here at the local level. We have a totally left-dominated newspaper, sort of a newspaper. And, of course, we have this conservative talk radio station is sort of a beacon of hope in a world of progressive darkness, not to be overly dramatic, but kind of sounds kind of good. So let's talk a little bit about some of the frivolous bills out there. What comes to mind, I'm not making this up, there was a bill that was sponsored calling for, you may recall this, pickleball diversity. Do you remember that one?
I'd forgotten.
Yeah.
And they're out there. I mean, it sounds like, you know, it sounds like something that ought to be on, you know, the Babylon Bee as one of their headlines. But these things actually happen. And you know, there is so much legislation pending or just bills that never go anywhere. I get the feeling sometimes that our legislators spend too much time in Raleigh. Am I wrong about that?
Well, I think they do. I mean, we've got dumb legislators, too. We've got a guy, Representative Jared Lowry out of Robeson County, who sought to strip all of the mascots that would be deemed offensive. He's going to leave it to the state school board, who are all far-left Marxists, to determine which mascots were offensive. And we calculated about 37 that would probably be on the chopping block. But get this, schools would have to pay the cost of changing their mascots if the leftists on our board, you know, wanted them to do that. So, you know, we've got Republicans, so-called, we call them trans Republicans.
Is that, I thought I heard you say that earlier. I was going to comment. I think that's awesome. So that's a Republican out of Robeson County who's proposing that?
An alleged Republican, yes.
That's outrageous. I thought for sure that was going to be a Democrat. That's outrageous that anyone that calls themselves a Republican would introduce garbage like that. But that's the problem with our party, you know, the rhinos. The uniparty establishment is the problem with our party.
Yeah. We've always said that. But we like to hold them accountable, and just as you do. And, you know, the more voices, the better. But we've got a lot of people that, you know, reach out and say, wow, we did not know that this was going on. Thank you for telling us. Yeah. And they really do like to hear the bills.
You know, my thoughts on this, just back to Steve's original point, is people are so busy. There's so much stuff going on in Raleigh that it's difficult to sort out. And I think you're doing a valuable public service. And this is why people appreciate it, because you can pick out and focus people on the important stuff. You know, look, here's the good stuff. You know, here's the four or five good things that are happening. Here's like the four or five atrocious things. And then no one has to, you know, spend weeks trying to sort out the wheat from the chaff, you know, and then you can focus them on the important stuff because people just don't have time to do it. So you're doing a grand public service, Sloan.
Thank you so much. We enjoy our work very much.
I want to shift gears real quick in the time we have remaining and hit a couple of other topics. everyone that I know who's somewhat interested in current events, I think they've mostly moved on from the Jefferson Griffith Riggs race for the Supreme Court seat that will apparently never end, and now there have been so many iterations of where it is in terms of, you know, legal challenges and appeals and pending this and pending that. What is your view of that? Has this been worth the effort by Jefferson Griffith to try to, you know, expose in some cases actual voter fraud, or is this merely going to sort of make the Republicans look obstructionist or look bad in some way?
Well, anyone that says that is a moron. Anyone that says it is fearful that it makes us look like obstructionists, they are the type of people that make us lose. They are the type of people that imbue with us a weakness and a soft spine. And I've heard a few people say that, and I've told them, don't ever want to hear it again. The reason is this. The law is the law. The law is only valuable if it is enforced. I mean, plenty of laws are on the books. Very few are enforced, at least against Democrats. No, the time is well beyond us to start playing hardball. Well, and I don't even think it's hardball, guys. I think it's following the law and insisting that it be followed. Look, they tried to throw out this argument called latches. It's a legal argument that says, listen, you're not allowed to overturn an election, right? If you have an issue, you need to bring that before the election. Well, how the hell do you bring up votes that are tainted before an election? You can't. So the argument was really not a good one, right? So I thought that the three-judge panel from a month ago had a very good prescription. We'll see where it's handled. But again, if you're a Republican and you're saying, oh, let's just lose in grace and in style and keep our head up.
Those days are over.
On that.
That's what got us to where we are. We got, you know, the Democrats go down swinging. They go to the mat and they expect Republicans to fold. I'm glad to see a Republican standing up.
And it's for the rule of law.
Right.
We're not pulling things out of thin air. The law is there. The law is meant to be followed. And oh, by the way, you know, Allison Riggs is still winning. This isn't about winning. It is about making sure the law is enforced. So the votes that have been counted, she still has more votes than he does in the win column. This is about having rules followed. Rules are there to be followed. Laws are there to be followed. So, guys, if you do hear some of your highbrow friends say, oh, my, this is making us look unseemly, you need to give them a swift kick in the pants and tell them what is up.
Yeah, that you're exactly right. Just like these people who say, well, you know, I really like Donald Trump's policies, but I just wish he would stop doing this or stop saying that or wear a different color tie or, you know, whatever it is. They always revert back to the trivial because the policy is the essence of it. That's what matters. So don't apologize for supporting the common sense conservative mission that drives the MAGA movement. I don't understand that. And yet polls show that especially older Republicans, you know, tend to remain leery of Trump and MAGA.
Well, you know, that for the first time we're overtaking them with younger voters. So that this is a great time to be a conservative, because I don't know about you guys, I got damn tired of being associated with a bunch of blue hairs.
Yeah.
Sorry. And I do love our older folks in the party, but I'm telling you, it is very cool and very refreshing to identify with 21-year-olds rather than 71-year-olds. I'm just saying.
Yeah, and that struck me as well during earlier in the week when Trump basically televised his cabinet meeting, and they went around this gigantic oval table, and just the youth and vitality in that cabinet, you know, just blows you away. It not only gives you optimism about the here and now, but it gives you tremendous optimism about the future. You know, when Donald finally just goes back to playing golf 4 or 5 days a week, which ultimately he will. I mean, that day will come. Yeah. But we've got 40, 45, 50-year-olds in their prime, you know, lined up to come in and carry the torch and move us forward. So I think that's really encouraging. And now we just need to see more of that down ballot and in you know in the statewide races and municipal and county races as well. I think that's the next goal. Let's shift attention. Since we're going all over the place, there's a lot to talk about, and while we have you, we want to cover all the key stuff. I don't think that until we have the advantage of history of looking back, that we will be able to fully appreciate how abandoned and neglected the people of Western North Carolina have been and still are to some degree by first Roy Cooper's administration and then currently the governor Josh Stein and many other Democrats that we have mentioned today. And I was talking earlier in the week about the comeback of Marshall, North Carolina, and how they put that town back together in a little over 6 months, you know, brick by brick, and they did it basically on their own, with very little state or federal assistance, other than maybe monetary, but not a lot of manpower, that's for sure. How do you suppose history is going to judge the many failures of our government in the aftermath of this unforeseen tragedy in Western North Carolina?
Well, I mean, you know, Western North Carolina has had, you know, certainly slow response, and we're keeping an eye on that. We're watching that. But, you know, they've gotten a lot of attention, thank God, from the president. And, you know, we have been sounding the alarm, and there's a lot of good journalists and journalism that have, you know, raised up from this, this unfortunate tragedy. But there are many other places and people that don't have voices that have been, you know, hate to use the word marginalized, but for lack of a better word, you know, so I mean, I really, you know, I'm not as up on that as my colleagues are. I'll be honest with you. We have my podcast co-host is there and
yes.
Calculates a lot. I do know that there's a lot of eyes on it, and if it weren't for President Trump, there would not be.
No, that's true. I mean, you're seeing stories where this whole group of people from Amish country in Pennsylvania have descended on the area, and they're literally building homes. And they're not just building, you know, little temporary huts. They're building homes. And, of course, these stories are very uplifting, but there aren't enough Amish to rebuild the structures that were lost. And, of course, the other thing that we've seen time and time again is that, you know, people who have dared to criticize the government's failures in many cases become targeted, and they sort of, you know, they sort of end up facing unexpected visits from, oh, I don't know, law enforcement or Secret Service agents or you name it. It's been quite a hard thing to watch, and knowing that it's so close by us, just a few hours away, and that it, you know, it has affected real lives in tangible ways. But I guess the good news is that the comeback is on, and we have identified some incredibly heroic people in this process of the last 6 to 7 months. I think about the NASCAR driver Greg Biffle, who's got his little, you know, two-seater helicopter, and how he spent day after day after day picking up supplies and flying into some very treacherous areas that required, you know, I guess the reflexes of a NASCAR driver come in handy, but also the piloting skills that he possesses. And he's just one man, and yet he did so many missions that, you know, we sort of lost track after a while.
So speaking of Greg Biffle, I saw on Easter, he took his helicopter back up to Western North Carolina and was throwing out Easter eggs for the kids, right? I hope someone tells him not to show up on Thanksgiving and throw out live turkeys.
Right. Well, he had, yeah, and he had the Easter Bunny as his co-pilot for that.
God is my witness. I thought turkeys could fly.
Yeah, exactly.
That's hearkening back to the famous WKRP in Cincinnati episode.
Exactly. Well, thank you for bringing that one back to mind.
Yes. As a radio professional, I think you realize that.
Yes, exactly.
We all realize that because we're all professional.
Exactly. Well, Sloan Rackmuth, we can't thank you enough for joining us today. And let me repeat once again that you need to make this appointment viewing on Tuesdays and Thursdays, NC Political Tea, via all of your various podcasting platforms at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Sloan, thank you very much, and we hope you'll come back and join us again.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Sloan.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, that was a great conversation with Sloan, and we've been following her work for a number of years. You know, she was she kind of emerged, I want to say, I don't know, maybe pre-COVID as an advocate for education reform.
Yep.
And was very critical of the failing role of the Department of Public Instruction out of Raleigh, and sort of the fact that it really didn't have a lot of power and didn't do much, and how there was too much power within the State Board of Education, which I guess Democrat control, which is still the case. But anyway, we will hope to have more guests of Sloan's caliber coming up in future shows here on Taking Aim. I think that's a very inspirational way to go with this program, is to hear it so you don't have to listen to us all the time, I guess is what I'm getting at.
That's a bonus feature.
Exactly. That, yeah, totally is. So, you know, we have got, we're into the month of May now. And I guess the biggest thing that we're watching both at the federal level and the state level is budget. You know, what are they doing with taxpayer dollars? At the state level, once again, there seems to be a lack of urgency to pass a budget, as there was last year when it, I think it went into the fall before there was a conclusive budget passed. But it's, and then of course at the federal level, we've got this $36 trillion debt that we have to tackle. And yet, even with DOGE finding ways to cut spending, the budget process doesn't seem to necessarily want to go along with that in the halls of Congress. And we're seeing a lot of tap dancing regard.
We all, in the coming weeks, we need to focus on both at the state and, well, especially, I'm sorry, we need to focus on the federal level to make sure that the House and Senate passes a bill to support the greatest of all time president, Donald J. Trump. Because these feckless, I stole your word there, Mr. Woodward, these feckless and rhino Republicans, you just, you know, they're waiting in the wings to stab him in the back. And they need to pass the legislation to codify the stuff that President Trump is doing. And they need to pass a balanced budget. I mean, DOGE, there's so much fraud, waste, and abuse that if they just cut that out, I think that balancing the budget would just be going back to what the federal government spent 4 years ago. 4 years ago. But for some reason, I mean, have all of our spending gone? I mean, have your wages gone up, you know, 70% in the last 4 years?
No.
Well, the federal governments have, like, gone up, what, 50, 60%? All the federal government has to do is set their spending back to 4 years ago, and we have a balanced budget.
And I just hope that there's no appetite for creating a new high-end tax bracket to so-called tax the
soak the rich and
soak the rich, because that would be not a conservative thing to do. Sorry, can't do it. David Hensley,
Steve Woodward.
It's been another great show today. We thank you all for joining us. We're here every Saturday at 11 a.m. And what are we doing?
We're taking aim.